Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, is the automatically deleted husband. Extremely tired, so I'll be brief. You've heard this before. I listened today when I was eating to a gentleman I think I mentioned before, Gonzalo Lira. He is a guy who was born in the U.S. of, I think, American and Chilean parents. So he's bilingual, speaks English and Spanish, and he lives in Krakow, Ukraine. And so he's providing information and does most every day a live broadcast from Ukraine. And the Russians are very close to taking that city. Krakow is near the Donbass. So, but anyway, he's been very insightful. And I've only known about him for actually a few months. I knew about him a little bit before this because he occasionally appears on this Duran program that I also find intriguing because it's far more, it's not the fluff. It's far more, engages more seriously. But the thing that was fascinating, you know, the issue is his language is a bit colorful. So, but he did a program yesterday, I think it was the day before, on Victoria Nuland. And I knew probably at least half of this because I was familiar with her. She's the one who did, you know, because it was like 2014, the FEU recording, as it's been known, that was leaked. And it became a big stir because of, and she's, you know, still highly placed. And the way Gonzalo said it, it's basically her war, because she was very heavily involved in placing the leadership that's in Ukraine now there. But anyway, you know, I did the thing with Volvan and Lexus, and of course, you know. Since I haven't publicized it, there's been hardly any traffic, but there has been some traffic. And then there's the, I did not get a response from them. So I'm guessing it's kind of a dead issue. But in the same way with this Gonzalo Lira, he gets a whole lot of traffic. I mean, you know, 100,000 plus views of this Victoria Nuland thing. And I'm wondering about doing the same kind of thing, making a copy. But the issue I have is I looked and I do not have an email address for him. He's on Twitter and Telegram, and I use neither. So, you know, I'm not sure what to do about that. Then the but I'm wondering because I don't know. I really think it will be helpful to listen to that. It was long. Like I say, it's like 2 hours long. But again, one, you know, because he's been very insightful about what he anticipates happening because, again, familiarity, he's there. But the other aspect is he made a point that I wasn't aware of this about Victoria Nuland, but I'm aware of this with, like, Angela Merkel and... I think it's true of Margaret Thatcher, the other woman who the more recent one, who was Prime Minister of England, no kids. And, you know, I basically have thought this and said it, but he said it also, I think, quite well. It changes the personality of a woman who doesn't have kids. And you know the aggressive nature and things of that nature is very much there. And I just thought it was an interesting comment, but I won't dwell on that. The other thing is I've been striving to figure out how to describe the importance of Shofar Book. And so I want to go through it just as an exercise as we try to refine this. Because in the U.S., people know about things like credit scores. So if you want to get a loan, if you have a high credit score, or you want to get a credit card, whatnot, a higher credit score will get you more funds and probably a lower rate. And people are kind of used to that. We understand it is a way to assess your credibility. Then we've had new versions of that with, you know, the vaccine passport idea, or which is kind of floated around domestically, very much in Canada, a whole lot in Europe, the Green Pass and things of that nature that you see there. And in Australia, it's been ridiculous. Because if you want to come into our store, come into our restaurant and so forth, we have to verify that you're okay. So we need this vaccine passport. So culturally, we've kind of seen that come into place. There are various other versions of this. Israel is really strong on this. There's been a lot of protests in France and in, I think, both Greece and Italy. Some in the UK. Germany has been very forceful. Austria has been very forceful. But there are people saying no to this. But anyway, the other thing is you can see that probably the most extreme would be China. Because for years now, they've had the growing influence of the social credit score or the sesame credits. That system's in place. And it's not just to get into a restaurant kind of thing. But if you have a low social credit score, you know, then if you want to get on a train or a plane, you can't. It's not simply you have to pay more money, or you can't get a good seat. You can't get on, period. In some cases, you cannot get a passport to leave the country. So your social credit score has a lot more of an impact. And you may end up in the thing that makes the news is the Uyghurs, because there is apparently a very large amount of those people are in work camps, re-education camps and so forth. And there's a lot of focus on that. But see, the labor camps have been in China for decades. And the numbers of people that are in those labor camps are in the millions. You know, there was the one story that I remember somebody wrote, because the guy actually got interviewed sometime later. I don't remember how this worked out. Because it's this Lagoy ministry, because one guy who was involved and then ended up in the U.S., he has a museum in China and in Washington, D.C., and this is where I gave the link. But there was a case example of a gentleman who was working in one of these factories, you know, a prison factory, and he wrote a note on the product he was making, because a lot of those products are things that are, you know, very, very trivial, very cheap, like wrapping paper for Christmas gifts. So he wrote several notes, and I think it was in California or Arizona, I don't remember. You know, buys this wrapping paper and finds this note, and it becomes public. And, you know, I mean, that was a big deal. That was a really big deal. I need to find that. But anyway, so you see those real life examples that are happening. Now consider, you know, as I jokingly say, I'm one of seven people in the United States who doesn't have a cell phone, because people have become dependent on it. And the issue is, there are two factors. One, which I actually think is the bigger factor, is it's changing people socially. The young generation, they cannot look at you face to face. They look at their phones. They don't look face to face. I mean, this is not a minor issue. This is a big issue. And that is the fundamental reason why I would say, if there's reconciliation in my family, cell phones are gone. It's child abuse. It's child abuse to give a cell phone to a kid. But the other aspect, because obviously this is directly my field, is the tracking. You know, and I have described years ago, you can make a cell phone where you can have the normal communications without being tracked. But again, who dares? I mean, literally, who will dare engage me on that? I've described it, and people literally run scared. You know, you're the wrong side of the NSA kind of attitude. I mean, I've had, most people just simply are silent, but the people who have responded to me, it's that kind of response. That or it scares the living daylights out of them. Those are the responses. Because what kind of courage does it take to make a cell phone that doesn't, can't be tracked? You know, you think, oh, that's... No, there are serious costs there. However, people look at the cell phone and say, oh, I want this feature. I want this nice display. I want this and so forth. So that is the aspect that draws people in. And I need it for business. I need it for this reason. I need all sorts of excuses. And it's a tracking device. So you have that in place. And you say, okay, well, all right. You know, the common line is I have nothing to hide. Because again, you have to remember, essentially all voice calls are recorded either by the corporate players at the Utah Data Center, San Antonio Data Center, Fort Meade, or the Donut in the UK, and probably other places. It's not some of them. It's all of them. Except where you know, they don't go through the normal system. But anything over the normal phone lines, it's recorded and kept. You know, I should include that link, the one comedy, because there was a group out of Germany who did a video, and I described before, where it's an animated thing, and you see just a mountain range, and you see them panning down. And the first time I saw that, because I knew they were into the security thing, and they're panning down, I said, they're going to show the Utah data center, and that's what they did. I'll try to remember to put the link in there, rather too. Anyway, it's great, so you have the recording, the audio, and you have, it used to be the early cell phones, they could track you to within which cell tower you were on, and then, somewhere within that area. Now, because basically all cell phones have a GPS system in it, they can get it down to usually less than a few feet, so they know where you are. And it's not they know what you are when you're on the phone. They know where you are all the time. You know, and the issue is the amount of data collection is kind of iffy. But as time has gone on, just like, again, it used to be you can get you down to cell phone tower radius. Now we can get you down to a few feet. And it's not just some people, it's, you know, the percentage of people that they're doing this for is continuing to grow. But again, you have the attitude of, I have nothing to hide. Okay, let's say you're a follower of Christ. And you say, well, you know, I'm going to go gather Sunday morning at church. Or I'm going to meet with a bunch of people for a fellowship, Bible study, or so forth. That's known, because you now have announced, I go to this church and I'm there for the first service on Sunday morning and even to the point that I sit near these people. And I go to a Bible study, with a group of people, and we meet together on a Thursday evenings. It's, you know, eight of us. And what we do is, you know, used to be people would bring their paper Bibles. Now we bring our cell phones and we have the Bible program on the cell phone. So we can gather together And we have the program, and it has wonderful abilities because we can search, you know, it's because I use that constantly. I definitely use it constantly. Obviously, it's my desktop, not my cell phone, but I use it constantly. The verse that says such, where is that? You know, because I'm still really bad at remembering where it is. That's why I have my friend Chris, because I can say something and he says, oh yeah, that's in Galatians 4 or whatever. Anyway, but so you have that, and you have that program on there. And so it's not only that you are gathering, because if you were to gather with a group of people and you have this gathering of, let's say, are 8 people, and 4 of you have a printed Bible and 4 of you have an electronic Bible on your cell phone. But the other 4 probably have a cell phone in their pocket or purse. You know, and I've seen people, seen women with the cell phone, and they stick it in their bra. I saw one woman with a cell phone in one of these fanny packs. You know, the issue is it's constantly broadcasting, and you know, people are concerned about 5G towers, but you have 5G and 4G broadcasting from your phone. And the amount of people who get cancer right where their phone is, whether it's by their ear, whether, you know, breast cancer, or anyway, it is a problem, but I won't go that path. But so you have this group of people that they've gathered. Maybe it's a one-time thing, maybe it's a regular thing, but they've gathered. And some of those people have the electronic Bible. And it's not just that you have the electronic Bible, and of course it's private because it's on my phone and nobody knows. That's not true. Just like the audio is recorded and your position is recorded, check. A lot of cell phones will have things like how the battery was being consumed, whether it's done by the flashlight, cameras, particular programs running. So now we record the fact that you're running, you're actually using. It's not just running, but using this Bible program. And it becomes real easy to correlate. You have these 8 people, 4 using a paper Bible, 4 using a cell phone. And it's not that we may have the details about what you're doing, but we have the information that you're running that program. So it's kind of like, great, I got this program. A lot of them are free. You know, the one I use is a freebie. And you're using that. But what can an observer, a program, software observer, realize? All right, we have these 8 people. They're in close proximity to each other. 4 of them are running this Bible program. So we have a bit of evidence that all 8 of these people, because they're together, are doing a Bible study. It's not that we do it to these 8 people, but we do it to 8 million. Now, that information is known. We're not going to talk about it, but that information is known. And it's not just your financial credit score. It's more like the social credit score in China. You're tagged. And what could happen? The drama is the police raid at your door. They're going to come arrest you and throw you in the gulags. Well, you know, it could get to that. What's the more likely thing to do? Just like the credit score. It's going to lower. And you won't know why. But you're part of that group of people who actually reads the Bible. And you gather with people because you have a paper Bible, but the person you're with has the electronic one and they're using it. You've been tagged. You know, it's very similar to the idea, because it's been done. Was it done in Canada? It was done somewhere else, but the place that was done the most was in Israel, because what they did is when somebody tested positive for COVID-19, again, the test was useless, but when somebody tested positive, they would look at the path where they were through the day and find all the people who were near them and go after them and say, "You were exposed." I mean, this happened. All the people who used that electronic Bible and the people who were with them using their papal Bible are tagged same way. So if your focus is, and I want that big nice screen and all these fancy features, you have a problem. And you will be tagged. So what do you do? It's kind of like it's the mask thing. Those people who don't wear a mask, they're dangerous. Stay away from them. It's people who use the Bible. They're dangerous. Stay away from them. It's not that you have strong evidence or anything of that nature, but you put it into the culture. So you become kind of, you have to step out of the culture. So a lot of these things, the mechanics is basically in place and it's maturing. You know, I constantly talk about when the Bible uses the term mature, it's the idea to grow closer to perfection or completeness. It's not perfection, but it is a completeness. And that is the point that I think you have to keep in mind, is you think that, oh, great, this technology is wonderful, it helps us. Because it is great. Again, the searchability, and, you know, because there's two aspects that I very much desire to do with Shofar Book. One is to make it really easy for somebody to look at the words and see, one, the interrelations. You know, I mentioned yesterday when I read Hosea and I saw the passage, and I said, okay, I know that that relates to the Genesis 32, Jacob wrestling with Christ. And, you know, so I can see that. But I can see that because I have, you know, decades of study. But the novice, me, decades ago, I wouldn't see that. And it's not that I want to bring a commentary. I want to give somebody the tools so they can find these things themselves. That is the fundamental. And then the other issues, take one of my favorite words, assume parakaleia, to together draw near, to mutually encourage. To see that the mutually encourage, when you see that in some translations, it's together or with, near call, together soon, para, near call, kaleo call. And to see that, and it's kind of like, it gives you that visual idea. This is what it is to mutually encourage. And it's not that a commentary gives you that, but you can look and you can see that's what the words are. You don't have to know the Greek. Anyway, I want to do that again, but got to find somebody who cares. But there's the other aspect to that is, yes, Shofar Nexus has all the, well, you know, the objective is the hypersecure communications, and which, again, I can easily describe it, but again, I'm on the wrong side of the NSA, so people run. But the other aspect of it is I want to take that Bible, put it on a cell phone, a tablet, and shut down all communications. So when I gather with that group of people, my device is just like a paper Bible, in the sense that nobody knows, unless you know an observer, a physical, I see that kind of thing. It's not telling the world electronically. It's not reporting to the Five Eyes that, or you know, the corporate players, that I have a Bible. And I think that's vital. One, for the group. So when that group meets, they can meet without a cell phone and they're not tagged. And the other is for the individual. And, you know, I can think of it anywhere, but the obvious one that comes to mind is the individual in Saudi Arabia. Because if he has that, it could cost him his life. It's not just a lower credit score. But anyway, so I need to say that more concisely. That's my objective. Part of the reason to maybe put on this from Gonzalo Lira, his talk about Victoria Nuland, is maybe one day, sooner or later, somebody will say, I want what you do, or I want to make it happen. You know, or somebody says, yeah, I got a wad of cash I can lay down on you, and you can quit what you're doing, spend a year and do this. And I would, beyond question. But I really see, one of the things that I'm finding, it's the, you know, as we see in the Gospels. Excuse me, everybody. Look at me. I'm about to put this large donation into this plate. I want everybody to notice that I'm doing this. Aren't I special? Or I'm going to donate to this organization and they're going to name this building after me. I've done it. When we were making big bucks and I was heavily involved with the Pregnancy Care Center in Greensboro, we had the annual banquet. And on the brochure, we had categories. This level of donor, you know, the $100 donor, and you know, the $1,000, or was it $5,000? Because for 2 or 3 years running, whatever the top category was, $1,000 or $5,000, I don't remember what it was. It was Heritage Systems Corporation. And I was encouraged by that. That was my pride, because Heritage Systems I owned. It was disgusting on my part. It was really disgusting on my part. Because I can look at that brochure and everybody knows, oh, look, Heritage Systems is the number one sponsor of this banquet tonight. Those people must be special. It was obscene because it was me. And I really, it should have been done in secret. I have no regrets because over the years, gave a whole lot of money to the organization, and even more in time. But nobody should have known. That was wrong on my part. Really wrong on my part. That's another issue. But anyway, I want to do this. You know, it's yes, there's the secure communications aspect of it, and there's the idea of being able to, you know, have your own to publish audio, video, as obviously I'm doing, to be able to do it where nobody knows that it's being communicated. I mean, all that stuff is, you know, But and then there's ways to actually make an income off that if you do it, you know, either small or large, either supplemental or, you know, your livelihood. It can be done, but I don't have the time to get to that point because I don't have the resources to do it. And so it's done. If somebody doesn't drive it, it's a problem. But if I got the shofar book thing done, because of the fact I can just throw it out there, and as I describe it as self-replicating, once it's out there, it's out there. And it doesn't have to be at a central location to get it, because if I have one, I can give my copy to you, and you can make a copy for somebody else, and they can make a copy for somebody else. It's a rather simple process. And you brick the phones or the tablets or whatnot. No communications. It's over. Anyway, I'll stop. I'm trying to be able to find a way to explain that, because Lord willing, the door will open. I want it to open so badly. Yeah, I know how to do it. You know, I talk with the people in India. It's been hard. I rarely do. But I'm trying to communicate with them on the gas pump stuff. And the way they're described, and I've seen this constantly, they're just, you know, it's a job. No, yeah, do I want to learn any? No, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And I don't need to know anything more about that. I need to find somebody with that passion. I want to know how this works and why it works. I want to know why. Because the person who wants to know why about the computers, who is also a follower of Christ, is probably someone who's also saying, I want to know why the Lord is who he claims to be and what it is to be obedient to him, what it is to love. I need to find a young guy like that. I need to find somebody that may have only a vague idea of the technology, but is the great communicator. I'm not talking about Reagan. But, you know, somebody who can say, I can get this idea across. I remember one Sunday where my wife and I, we were part of the Sunday morning announcement thing, and we blew it. It was like we had two services or whatever. And the second service, we goofed. And the associate pastor came up afterwards, and he filled in the holes. And that stuck out to me, because it's, yes, I can tell you about computers. I can give you the in-depth, all the gobbledygook you want. But the ability to deliver well, I'm not there. And I can see there's some people who can really do it well. It's, you know, and again, it's not the flashy stuff. I'm going to entertain you, but I'm going to inform you. Those people are, I'm not that person, and I want to find that person with a shared value. Oh, look, who's coming down the driveway? Maybe, anyway. Lord willing, one day. In the meantime, I got a little further on the gas pumps today for the next step, because we have, anyway, I won't go there. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore, I mentioned before, well, it's the clumsiness, my sin in my pride of my donation to the Pregnancy Care Center. My sin in my pride of buying the land we had, several acres at Polo Farms, the country club. My sin in driving a BMW and a Mercedes-Benz and a Lexus. It was sin, because it was rooted in pride. My my clumsiness. You know, for example, one really good decision is after yet another set of collapses, I took the job at Microsoft. If you recall, I flew out there alone, left the family in Alabama, flew out there for, I was there for like 3 weeks, I think. Because, you know, I started in a position where, you know, because I think I started, this was 2007. I started at 120K and then ended up moving to, took the job at Westar for only 100K in Alabama instead of Washington State. And when you consider cost of living, it was a raise. So, I mean, I found that fascinating. But that was still a good salary for even out there. But the reason I said, no, I can't do this, is because I saw the culture there in Seattle. And of course, it's really, or Redmond, it's really gone downhill, apparently. You know, this is where they had the, whatever that place was called, where, and what did I hear? Was it Amazon? People at one of their data centers, they're saying, okay, we're going to move the staff out to a different location because Seattle is having problems for security because of the amount of crime that has just skyrocketed in Seattle. So, you know, the crime is one thing, but it's the culture in general. And I said, no, I can't take my family there. The places around the world where you can't take your family are growing. I think that was one of the very good decisions I made in my life, to not bring my family out there. We could have been comfortable. But it's, in a real sense, it's the Faustian bargain. It wasn't worth it. I don't have the desire to make a lot of money anymore. I don't have a desire to have, you know, again, the car I liked the most was the BMW. That really, you know, they called it the ultimate driving machine. And it just felt good to drive. And it handled nicely. But the problem, you know, there's the joke about the problem with the car is the nut behind the wheel. Well, in this case, it was the proud man behind the wheel. That was a problem. And, you know, I am pleased. You know, I haven't had a car in almost 10 years. And I don't want one. Definitely don't want one. Anyway. My lady, my wife, your husband has matured, growing closer to perfection or completeness. The moving away from the pride, is it gone? Not at all. Moving away for the lust for the, you know, lust of the eye, lust of the flesh, pride of life, has shrunk significantly. Is it gone? No way, nowhere near. But it's changed. And the further I get away from it, the more I am distant from the world. And obviously also distance from those in the institutional church. But the one thing I have, because I don't have the pride that I used to have, I don't have the desire for my position. I am not concerned about being part of a club. I can offer grace to my enemies without hesitation. If I do put on this this audio about Victoria Nuland from Gonzalo Lira, I'm going to be putting on a bunch of foul language. I don't have a problem with that. I don't use that kind of language. But I'm not going to look at that man as my enemy. Because he has, within that foul language, a lot of things that I think he explains better than I do. He's not my enemy. Neither is Jim Cross, Rhonda Keynes, or Chris Bitterman. I think they'll probably look at me as their enemy. Anyway, my lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore, intensely love and adore, you know, that lady, I love you and I want you back.